Newell will be back tomorrow. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday. Thanks for joining us here on WWL. We'll continue the conversation as time allows about the visceral hate that has been spewing politically and beyond that, really, because it's not just amongst politicians. Now it's so much amongst so many people, whether it's in discussions on social media or wherever. And is there any way to end it without a world war, a famine, a crisis, a terror attack, or the other things that have brought us away from such hatred within before? That conversation will continue throughout the program. Coming up next hour, we're also going to get Ron Fauché in here in the 12 o'clock hour. A lot of folks have said that the mayoral race in New Orleans wouldn't really begin till after Labor Day. Well, guess what? It's after Labor Day. So what does the race hold over the next 5 weeks, and really in less than that before early voting begins ahead of the October primary? So we'll have that conversation in the 12 o'clock hour. Coming up at 11:30, Colonel Jeff McCausland joins us, CBS News military analyst, to talk about the use of the National Guard to fight crime in the United States, as the president has several times over the last few days suggested sending troops into Chicago following his deployment of the military in Washington, D.C. So that's coming up in about 20 minutes here on WWL. Right now, Newell on Tuesdays, as you know, in the 11 o'clock hour, likes to recognize what he calls New Orleans difference makers. And the NOLA Coalition, a group of more than 500 businesses, organizations, individuals, and other entities, has come together to help fight crime in New Orleans after we saw those massive spikes in violence in our city after the pandemic. The NOLA Coalition's goal has been very clear: to use an all-of-the-above approach to trying to reduce crime in our community. Joining us in this segment today is Greer Mendy. Hey, Greer, how are you?
Good morning. How are you? I'm good. Thank you.
Hope you had a great Labor Day.
I did, and I hope you did as well.
Yeah, it was a nice, I had to work, but still enjoyed the holiday as I had an opportunity. So tell us, what do you do, Greer Mendy, that with the NOLA Coalition? What is your organization?
Our organization is Tecrema Center for Art and Culture. It is a cultural organization, cultural arts organization, organized in New Orleans in the year 2000.
In the year 2000, wow! So you're going back 25 years. You didn't form to join the NOLA Coalition, or were inspired by the efforts, because many of the groups that we've talked to have come together in just the last few years. You've been doing this 25 years as an effort to better our community and help in many ways, including fight crime, right?
That's correct. It started as a strictly arts organization. We evolved to address the arts, but as you know, the arts addresses the humanities, not only the humanities in an esoteric or an artistic way, but our humanity, the humanity of all New Orleanians. We just do it through the lens or the frame of reference of Tecrema Center's mission.
So do you feel like by sharing art with the community and fulfilling your mission, which we'll talk about here in just a moment, that that can be another avenue by which to help fight crime, or at least give those who might fall into a life of crime or pursue a life of crime another avenue, perhaps, that prevents them from doing that?
Yes, definitely. And one of the things Tecrema does, and I'm most proud of this effort, in our programming, we have something called Tecrema Youth Dance Arts and Humanities Education Program. It's designed for children, and we started it, as you spoke about the spike in crime, we started it when we looked at what was going on in New Orleans. I think most of our children are good. They're good. Their families are good. Everyone's well-intended. But there are children who slip through the cracks because of their economic or their family situations or whatever. We contact schools. Schools refer children to us who have an interest or a talent in the arts. It's an arts education program. They're trained, and not once they're trained, but part of the process is that they receive study stipends. I said study stipends. We're just not giving them anything. They have to take class. They have to follow directions. They have to turn in assignments. They have to research. They have to integrate with the people who come into the Sanchez Center to see what we're doing, what we're talking about, and that's New Orleans culture, particularly New Orleans, Louisiana's African-American cultural practices. People come from around the world to study, to look at it, to ask us, to engage. And these children, these youth, have to be involved in that as well. And so if they successfully complete what they're supposed to do, if they participate in class, they receive a study stipend.
You know, I've had the honor of doing a number of these Difference Maker segments here on Newell's show, and I've talked to people who introduce sports to at-risk youth and give them the opportunity to fall in love with participating in sports. I've talked to people who introduce business opportunities. I've talked to people who present culinary opportunities, and all of these avenues give young people something to be passionate about, something to care about, and something to want to live for. And what a better way to give something to live for than through the arts. So tell me, how do you do this? Are we talking about arts across the board, or is there a specific area of the arts that you focus on?
The area that I focus on would be dance, and it would be the literary arts. We bring in other artists with expertise in other genres to come in to teach, to lead, to mentor them. For instance, when you talked about business, Tecrema has a logo. Someone had to have designed that logo. So you design the logo. So now what's the next step? How do we put that logo on merchandise so that it's sold, so that we have some, so that we're generating some income from the development and the putting that logo on merchandise for sale. So we have all of these factors that come in. We have some youth that come in, and they don't come in, they don't participate weekly, but for special events, they come in because they come in and they work on the production side of what we're presenting or doing. And they're responsible for everything. Once I come in and give them the instructions, they're responsible for everything from setting up to breaking down to the sound to the lighting to making sure the costuming is in place and everyone is assigned or has what they need. And that's it. There are a lot of different avenues and venues to which we can apply these different genres or these different categories within the arts and the humanities.
Yeah, that's great. So from the visual arts to the performance arts to the behind-the-scene efforts to make everything to come together, you find a way to try and inspire the youth so that they have something to live for, something to look forward to, something that brings them joy and love that prevents them then from falling, like you said, between the cracks or ending up in a life of crime.
Right, right. And so for us, the objective of the program, one of the objectives is that the children, the youth, the young adults, they develop critical thinking skills. This isn't about them being seen. This is about them developing critical thinking skills so that, as you said, they don't fall between the cracks. Their lives are affected, or they can think about moving in another direction. One of the things we did this past session was, if we're talking about the literary arts and their writing and their creating, so what are you going to do with this after? How are we moving toward publishing this? But before you publish it, let's have a workshop. And the workshop is on copyright, on how to copyright your work. And what does copyright really apply to? And how is it going to serve you? So we raise funds, we do whatever we need to do so that the students who are involved in that, here's your fee for copyrighting your work.
To Crema,
and
if someone's listening to this and they say, hey, I have something I can contribute, that I have skills, whether it's in art or production, whether it's in dance, music, literary, or some other form, or they know a child who would be a good candidate for a stipend to participate in your program, how do they get a hold of you and how can they get involved in trying to help in your cause?
So our website is tecramaarts.com. Our email address is tecramacenter@gmail.com. Email us. We are welcome to receive, to work with anyone who wants to help the children in this community.
And Tecrema is spelled T-E-K-R-E-M-A. And thank you for being a member of the NOLA Coalition, for sharing the common goals with hundreds and hundreds of other individuals and organizations that really want to make a difference in our community and attack the crime problem from absolutely every angle so that we don't see the cyclical repeat of the spikes in crime that we all fear could be coming.
Yes. There's no fear. There's nothing but love and respect when you walk into any of the classes, whether it be a classical ballet class or a traditional West African dance class, or a discussion on how the HBCU marching band tradition was created. There's nothing but love and respect when you walk into our center.
Greer Mendy with the Tecrema Center for Arts and Culture. She's the founder and director. If you feel like you know someone who could help in her mission or that could benefit from her mission, please reach out and contact Tecrema. Thank you so much, Greer. Bye now.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You
have a great day.
I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. When we come back, we have some time to continue our conversation about today being the 80th anniversary of the signing of the treaty that ended the Second World War with the official Japanese surrender. What will it take to stop the visceral hatred in our community, in our country, against our own common Americans, to stop us from attacking each other on social media, politically, personally, in the community? It just seems that we have so much hate now that everyone's throwing at each other. As we talked to a historian about last hour, in the past, when we've headed down this road, a world war has ended it because we have a common enemy then to hate instead of hating our own people. Great Depression has ended it because we had a common cause to rally around. A terror attack ended it. Can we end it without that this time? We'll continue the conversation after this. And coming up at about 11:30, we'll talk about use of the U.S. military on the streets of American cities. Do you support it or not? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think if it reduces crime, it should be done, even in cities where maybe crime is heading in the right direction? But there are still rampant murders, carjackings, and other crime happening. We may be at historic lows, but is that acceptable enough? And is the National Guard the answer? We'll have that conversation this hour as well here on WWL. Text message is coming in on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text line at 504-260-1870. One text says, the only thing that can bring us together at this point is either something happens that brings everyone together against Trump, or, sorry, their text went on so long it's separated into multiple. But let me just stop there then. I don't know that something's going to bring everyone together against Trump, and I don't know that that's the answer either. I don't know that we all need to be against each other. Somebody else says, Trump is just telling the truth. Don't be angry if the truth is hard to take. Somebody else says, don't worry too much. This hate will stop in 3 years when Trump is done. Are you confident that someone won't take the lessons learned from Donald Trump's success in getting elected and try to replicate it? Are you sure that the next round of presidential candidates will not try to get to the White House in the same form or fashion, and that we won't see that played out as well in Senate, congressional, gubernatorial and other elections? I mean, negative campaigning has always been a part of the process, going as back as far as history can tell us. But it's one thing to be negative. It's another thing to be hateful. And I just feel with social media now, and really even in more traditional media that have changed the way they approach their broadcasting and their writing, that hate just seems to sell. Whether it's trying to get ratings or trying to get votes, whether it's trying to get elected or trying to gain popularity, that hate seems to be the way many are turning to accomplish that goal. And I don't like that. I think that it just sets an ugly tone in our society. And, you know, we talk about more people than ever before now live alone. I think some of that is because they don't like interacting with other people anymore, because the way people interact these days is not as pleasant as it used to be. I also think the fact that we have more people than ever living alone in our society speaks to that more people are spending time interacting with each other electronically, almost anonymously, sometimes fully anonymously, on the other end of a keyboard or a smartphone, and it brings out the worst in us. And I think that that isolation also can bring out the worst in some people, not all people, but some people. Being isolated is not a recipe for success. Do I think that social media should be done away with? No. I absolutely support people's right to espouse their views, even if they're hateful, as long as they're not creating immediate danger to others or inciting people to hurt other people. I'm a huge supporter of your right to free speech and mine as well. But I just wish that we could find a way to exercise our free speech in kinder, friendlier terms that could be just as effective without name-calling, espousing hate, and going down this very, very dark road it feels like we are going down these days. What do you think? 504-260-1870. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we plan to hook up with Colonel Jeff McCausland and talk about the plan to send the National Guard to Chicago that it appears the president is preparing to enact. He's dropping hints. He's posting to social media. The mayor of Chicago is, and the governor of Illinois are, and some others are speaking out against it. What do you think? Should we start deploying the National Guard to crime-ridden cities? Would you support deployment of the National Guard in New Orleans? Crime is going down, but there are thousands of violent crimes still being committed annually in New Orleans. So it's not like there's no crime just because there's less crime. Should we use all tools available to us? Or is deploying the military going too far? And if it's too far, why is it too far? We'll have the conversation after this on WWL. Over the holiday weekend, President Trump made several references on social media to the possibility of deploying National Guard troops to Chicago to help in the fight against crime. The mayor, police chief of Chicago, and the governor of Illinois are opposed to this apparent plan. To help us understand more about the possibilities and this use of the military, we asked Colonel Jeff McCausland to join us, CBS military analyst and political analyst, publisher, CBS military analyst, to join us here on WWL. Colonel, thanks for being here.
Yeah, please. I'm a military analyst. I am not a political person. Go ahead.
Yes, a CBS military analyst. Sorry, things were run together on the introduction I was handed
problem.
For you. So,
how
was your Labor Day weekend?
I had a beautiful Labor Day weekend. Thank you very much. I invested in a brand new, very expensive road bike because I like to ride bicycles. And I did about 50 miles on this bike over the weekend, which was fantastic.
You must have one of those cold fronts wherever you were over the weekend, huh?
No, it was cool. I'm in Pennsylvania. It was one of those, we call them Chamber of Commerce weekend, where the Chamber of Commerce takes photographs, you know. Blue sky, sunshine, about 75 degrees. It was fantastic.
Well, enjoy that. We're looking forward to that down here in October.
And by the way, may I say, while we're doing this, Yeah, God bless the great city of New Orleans as we pass through, of course, during this weekend. The 20th anniversary of Katrina, which I covered very closely for CBS back in the day, and where the city is now based on the disaster 20 years ago. Just an amazing testimony to the human spirit, resiliency, and the teamwork of the great city of New Orleans. So God bless all you for that.
Thank you, Colonel. We appreciate that. And I think that's actually a good segue, because 20 years ago today, we were begging for the military come to New Orleans. The city, the state, the region, there were difficulties with the White House and the governor's office, the National Guard and the Pentagon, all trying to determine who would be in charge, who would call the shots, how it would work. And all of that discussion, because it was an unprecedented situation, led to delays. So we wanted, as a community, the military to come and assist New Orleans. Chicago does not want the military. At least the mayor does not. The police chief does not. The governor of Illinois do not. Some of the people may. But how does this process work? Speaking of unprecedented, we saw some national troops deployed to Los Angeles during the riots there. And we have another court ruling today suggesting that was unconstitutional. We've seen the National Guard deployed in Washington, D.C., which is a different set of legal circumstances because it is the nation's capital and not a state. And Congress and the White House have certain powers in D.C. that they don't have elsewhere. But what about Chicago? Is this something that the president, A, has the power to do, and B, is there precedent for it?
You know, it's a great segue back to Katrina, because during Katrina, one of the most amazing things, which people may have forgotten, was where was Louisiana National Guard when Katrina hit? And the answer is one of the missions of the National Guard. The vast majority of the Louisiana National Guard was in Baghdad. They were deployed in Baghdad. There were very few National Guardsmen left in the state of Louisiana. And so as a consequence, one of the things that occurred was agreements were then signed between the various states, which allowed the governor of Pennsylvania to actually call up his guard and pass him over to the governor of the great state of Louisiana. But that was for a second mission, and that's the mission of the National Guard, which is disaster recovery. And we've seen that frequently throughout our history, where the National Guard is called up for natural disasters, whether forest fires in California or floods and hurricanes in the Gulf Coast. And then the third mission of the Guard, beyond Baghdad and beyond that disaster release, is social unrest. We have large-scale social unrest. So think of the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles. Or think of, if you're an old man like me, you can remember Vietnam and some of the disastrous things that occurred with the National Guard being called up in places like Kent State. Okay? But those are the missions. Overseas reinforcement of national security interests, Baghdad, humanitarian disasters, Katrina, or massive social unrest. And Mr. Trump is stretching that particular law pretty dramatically now and saying, well, I'm going to go in and police American cities. Okay, because we don't have massive social unrest and we don't have humanitarian disaster in the city of Chicago. And you're right again that Washington, D.C. is different because of the Home Rules Law passed by Congress. The president has more direct authority over the Washington, D.C. National Guard than he does another. But the problem is, and it's come out already now, that under the law, the National Guard cannot be used, or federal troops cannot be used, called up by the government for law enforcement. An individual governor could. The governor of Louisiana, the governor of Illinois could call up the guard and use them for law enforcement. And in fact, again, back to Katrina, many people don't realize the vast majority of the National Guard, when they arrived, were called up again by governors and therefore were under the control of the adjutant general of the great state of Louisiana and not under the control of the federal military and General Honoré, who was down there. A very small number of actually federal forces were under Honoré's command, a lot of Coast Guard because of air operations and sea operations. But the ground troops were under the command of the guard and the governor because they could do law enforcement in that particular case. But when called up by the president, can't do law enforcement. And now, as Mr. Trump is planning this, apparently, two curious things have happened. One, according to Governor Pritzker of the great state of Illinois, he hasn't spoken to Pritzker about what his plan is, number one. And number two, we've now had a court finding in the last few hours, I think, of a court in California, whereby the California governor actually went to court saying what Mr. Trump had done calling up the guard and federalizing him and deploying him to the streets of Los Angeles was contrary to the Posse Comitatus Act, which was passed by Congress in the 19th century, precluding the use of federal forces for law enforcement. Because when called up by the president, that National Guard now is federalized and becomes part of the federal force.
So short of, in your analysis, short of Congress changing the law or a contrary ruling from the United States Supreme Court, ultimately, the National Guard cannot be used in the way that the president wants to use them in Chicago, even if it's to enforce immigration laws or other laws that is not under the purview of the president as the law is written now.
Exactly. That would be my interpretation. But, you know, I'm a non-lawyer, oh, by the way. But that's right now the opinion of the court. To use National Guardsmen who have been federalized, that's a very important thing. They've been federalized. The president cannot use them for law enforcement. Now, if Pritzker was to call up National Guardsmen and put them on the streets of the city of Chicago for law enforcement under his authority as a governor, different equation, because now they're under the governor's authority and not under federal authority.
Colonel, where do you see this headed?
I see it headed to the courts. I see it headed to the courts, and that's where it's going to go for sure. The real question, of course, is there also now going to be a showdown between Pritzker and Mr. Trump? And I think it's also important to keep in mind, my interpretation, again, is this is part of Mr. Trump's larger effort, supported by a number of people around him, what's called the unitary theory of the presidency. And there was a lot of discussion prior to his election and in the aftermath by various very conservative think tanks that said, you know, we're not reading the Constitution correctly. There's a part of Article 2 of the Constitution really gives the president a lot more power than the president has ever exercised. And Mr. Trump is exercising that in a number of ways, and if you will, pushing out the bounds of his authority. This is only one. The declaring of all these tariffs, for example, which also is a second very important court case, is the second one where he has declared, well, it's a national emergency. So therefore, I, as president, can, at my own authority, put a 50% tariff on India and basically do whatever I want to and change it tomorrow if I'd like. Whereas most people would say, if you read the law, that's really the responsibility of Congress. And the unitary theory of the presidency, which they argue, basically says that there is no real checks and balances between the three branches of the government. There's the president who is supreme, supported by those other two branches. And that, I think, is also being called to question here by this particular action.
I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out in the courts. And Congress, of course, can change the laws if the president can convince them to do so and make them more amenable to what he's trying to accomplish. Colonel, I know you got to run. We appreciate your joining us and sharing your time with us here on WWL. Thank you for your kind words and for your analysis.
Always a pleasure.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst here on WWL. What do you think? 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. There's no doubt, and I know some of you are going to take issue with the statement that the president is pushing the boundaries of presidential authority, but he is testing them more than any president in modern history has. He is attempting to do things with the presidency that no president in our lifetime has tried to do with presidential powers. And, you know, you don't really know what the limits of something are until you fully test it. So I think we will find out if the president can use these powers he's insisting he has or should have. And ultimately, it will end up in the U.S. Supreme Court, which many perceive as a friendly court to the president because he has had the opportunity to appoint a number of the justices, and it is definitely a conservative-leaning high court. That all being said, should the National Guard be used in law enforcement? Do you support his efforts to call out the National Guard? And he suggested going to other cities beyond Chicago. Could that include New Orleans? I don't know. He hasn't said that yet. But if he's looking for cities where crime needs to be fought and wants to follow this model, why not New Orleans? 504-260-1870. Call me now or text me. We'll read your text and take your calls after this. Text coming in. One person says, with regard to using the National Guard, I think it's a question of whether or not it's effective and helpful as a crime deterrent. If it is, I see no reason not to use it if it's effective, and they don't use it. Simple as that. Somebody else says, President Trump is testing the powers. So what? Well, I wasn't judging. I was just stating the facts that he is, more so than any president in my lifetime, putting pressure on the system to tell us whether or not he has the power he is trying to utilize. And time will tell. And I think this will lead to us having a better definition of exactly what the limits of presidential powers are. Somebody else says, if we federalize the National Guard and send them in to enforce laws, will they have to follow the same rules as local police? Well, they'll have to be constitutional, right? And I think that's where the fear enters for many people. I'm not really sure, other than the political battles, why this is so divisive and why it has created this digging in of heels. If you can stop murders, if you can stop carjackings, if you can stop shootings, and there's a tool available to do it, it seems to me it should be considered. Now, if it can create more problems than solutions, well, that's another story. You don't want to create new problems, but don't you want to stop crime? Don't you want to reduce crime? And everything, I think, should be considered. But if the military is more harmful than helpful, someone explain to me why. Eric, thanks for calling. You are on WWL.
How are you doing this morning? I just had a few observations I want to make. First of all, I mean, like you was just saying, crime has overwhelmed the United States as a whole. I mean, it's just out of control. You got sex trafficking, illegals bringing all the drugs, murders up, the all-time high. A lot of
Hold on. Before you go on, Eric, I'm going to correct you there. Murders are actually at historic lows right now. So,
okay.
And I'm not saying that it's okay that we still have thousands of murders across the country. I'm just saying, just so we're accurate, murders are in most cities now at historic lows. All right, so go ahead.
No, but what I was trying to say is this, yeah, I mean, I believe that the federal, you know, government officials that he's bringing in, the National Guard, so they should have a little bit more leeway if they see a crime happening, you know, to intervene. And I don't think you are maybe not talking about such as that. But one point I want to make is this here. Maybe, just maybe, each city and state and local officials can have a sigh of relief and say, hey, we got the National Guard, and now we can take a deep breath and try to regroup and restructure without worrying about some crimes or criminals breaking in and robbing. Just maybe somebody on the floor we can hire them in and start a new structure and keep it up and up, bring employment up, you know, such as things as that. Have a positive outlook that by National Guard that maybe we can inspire some people to do better and want to change their lives.
So, Eric, you think it's a good idea to deploy the National Guard to help deter crime?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the city's overwhelmed. No matter one murder is too many. You know, random violence is really, really, I mean, it's something to, you know, to take into consideration, because random violence, you know, they're just picking out this person, that person, they don't even know, the elderly, you know, kids, mothers, like the lady who got kidnapped the other day jogging, you know, stuff like that. So,
Eric, I appreciate the call and you're sharing your thoughts with us here on WWL. Somebody else texts in and says, if I'm walking around New Orleans with my wife or my family or anywhere else, why wouldn't I want to be protected and be safe? Who wouldn't, if it means lessening the chance of getting robbed or mugged or worse? Who's against that? Well, I know a number of people, including the mayor of Chicago, and the governor of Illinois, have been very vocal in their opposition to the president's suggestion of sending the National Guard. And to me, what the president is doing effectively is putting these Democratic leaders in a difficult position to say that they don't want to fight crime, to say that they don't want to use all of the tools available to them to fight crime. And what I really am hearing, and this is where I really have a problem with all of this, is that some people believe that it's okay to have a certain level of crime, that some crime is okay, or at least some crime is better than calling in the military. Because it's not been said that this won't work. It's not been said that having military patrolling the streets won't deter crime. But people have espoused concerns about the appearance and what it looks like and setting the precedent and things like that. And the law obviously has to be taken into consideration here. And if the law does not currently allow for it, well, it can't be done. I guess we'll find if the law currently allows for it. Williams, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What do you think, Williams?
I think that the president should defer to the National Guards via the governor of each state.
So if the governor of that state does not want National Guard troops patrolling their state or cities within their states, you don't think the president should do it?
That's correct. It should be up to the governors of each state.
What message does that send, though? Then isn't it, aren't we letting politics play too much of a role in it? If we have a tool available to help protect people and reduce crime, but we're leaving it up to the governors to decide if they want to use that tool, doesn't that send
The governors already have control in many circumstances over the National Guard in their state.
Williams, why wouldn't a governor want the National Guard to help deter crime within their state, do you think?
I don't know. It has to be up to each individual state.
All right. If I made you governor of Louisiana and gave you the option of bringing the National Guard in to protect New Orleans, would you do it?
Yes.
Thank you, Williams. Appreciate the call. 504-260-1870. One person texts, Dave, if murders are declining and the number of states allowing concealed carry of firearms is at an all-time high, is there a connection? Well, the murders were already declining locally before that law went into effect here. It's still too early to know, and I think there's too many complicating factors to be sure if there's a cause and effect there. I think the jury is still out on that one. All right, we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation, but we'll also discuss the mayor's race in New Orleans. It was said over the last several months that, the race doesn't really begin till after Labor Day. Well, Labor Day was yesterday. So now that we're after Labor Day, we'll ask Ron Fauché, how does that change the race and what happens as we make our way toward the October primary for the mayor of New Orleans? We're back after this on WWL.